And I could thank you for inviting me to this very important symposium on urban soils. The title given to me, Carbon Dynamics and Storage in Urban Soils, is very important professionally to me. I wish I was able to tell you personally, but I could not because of clash of conflicts. Therefore, I appreciate the opportunity to come to the presentation and present it to you.
And this is
the carbon storage and dynamics in urban soil is important because the world population, as you know, is increasing rapidly. It was 2.8 billion in 1950 and 7.6 billion projected in 2020, 7.6 billion at the moment. And quite a lot of it's an urban population. For example, we see rural population change almost stabilized between 1950 and 2050, and the urban population is increasing rather dramatically. And in 2010, we have a higher urban than the rural population. In 2015, the difference is about barely 50 to 48%. And that this means that the growth of urban population is 2 persons per second. Between 1998 and 2008, the urban population grew by 1 billion people. 1.08, 9 billion or 1089 million. Urban population could double in Africa and Asia between 2020 and 2030. Here is an example of urban population in North America, trend between 1960 and 2015. In the US, the population from 130 million in 1960 to about 259 million in 2010, and about 364 million by 2050. In North America, trends both the Canada, US, and Mexico are very similar, increasing from 143 million in 1960 to 400 million by 2050. The growth trends, as given by the UN report in 2015, the urban population is less than 500,000 areas, increasing trend from 1990, 2014, and 2030. Cities of 500,000 to 1 million, population grew 94 in 1995, 25 million, 2014, 731 in 2030. The median size cities 1 to 5 million, and the number of cities of 5 to 10 million, 21 in 1990, 43. In 2014 and 63 in 2030. Now, mega cities are more than 10 million. Were only 10 in 1990, 28 in 2014, and 41 in 2030. So these are the number of cities. 10 mega cities in 1990, 28 in 2014, and projected to be 41. In 2030. So the trends in urban growth are really, really very definite. Other activities in relation to urban population, of course, mining, the energy, construction causes very drastic disruption of soil, surface sealing, a very important component, and of course, the urban ecosystem also suffer from urban erosion, so which leads to gaseous emission, which we should be concerned about. In terms of the urbanization of the land, it takes about 40,000 hectares to provide accommodation and infrastructure to 1 million people. The increase in population is about 75 million per year, which means it takes 3 million hectares of prime land out of production, mostly agricultural best land. Cities, as we see in the previous slide, a population more than 10 million, are 28 in 2015 and 41 in 2030, and a city of 10 million requires 6,000 tons of food per day. And this is important to consider because a lot of nutrients coming into the city and not going back to the land where it came from. This is especially true of hospitals, which has rather a limited supply. Even the recent estimate that we don't need to worry about hospitals speaking in another 300 years, that says that there is rather a small time in the human time frame that we are concerned with. So, urbanization, grossly disturbance, as I showed before, leads to a lot of depletion of the loss of soil carbon upon that, and the conversion of prime agricultural land to urbanization is really impacting the carbon cycle of the urban ecosystem. Therefore, urban agriculture has been an important component in many cities. I'm giving you a few examples here. Where the carbon lost due to the urbanization process can be put back to better agricultural practices adopted within the urban center. Harare, for example, in Zimbabwe, population of 2 million approximately, area of 870 square kilometers, area cultivated by 9,000 hectares, which is only about 16% of the city. The average power size ranging between 15 to 1,000. Nairobi, the population of 4 million. Area of city 700 square kilometers and plot size of about 100% of population, about 20 practicing agriculture, Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, also population about 4 million, area of 650 square kilometers. Area cultivated about 34,000 hectares, 4% of the city area, plot size of somewhere between 700 and 1,000 square meter, and families practicing urban agriculture, somewhere about 37%. Havana in Latin America, variants about 2.3 population, very, very important urban agriculture system there. 728 square kilometer, 15,000 hectare area, about 41% of the city's land area, plot size of about 1,200 square meter, and families practicing about 6%. Mexico, La Paz, again practicing a very prominent agricultural system. In Asia, Jakarta is a very good example, a very large area total. 11,000 hectare practicing agriculture, 0.03%, about 1% of the population. Singapore, a very small country, total city state, therefore agriculture in this city is really a very important component of food production for Singapore. Shanghai in China is another example. So urban agriculture is really gaining quite a lot importance. Singapore 100% demand of wheat and 25% of dairy product met by urban agriculture. Shanghai 60% of vegetable, 100% of milk, 90% of eggs consumed are produced in the city. So urban agriculture is really quite important in terms of converting rooftop into gardens, planting and harvesting crops in empty lots, such as in Ohio, some of the cities, Youngstown, Ohio. A very good example, abandoned city space, contaminated soil, indoor farming using gray water, several options, including to prepare vertical farms. There are a few examples, including some in the United States, especially Chicago. Urban waste, both biosolid and bioliquid, can be used as a compost, biofuel, production, biochar through pyrolysis, converting into green water, which can be used for plant production, and of course, using hydroponics, using aquaponics, and aquaculture. Something which is a liability can become an asset through proper use of urban waste. Indeed, 2 million tons of human waste are currently disposed in water courses every day. And hopefully, this can be recycled to minimize the environmental impact at the same time make ecological gains. It's important to consider the multifunctionality of urban land use in terms of ecologic, economic, social, planning and other multidimensional issues. Ecologically, intrinsic natural value, genetic diversity value, large sport value can be enhanced economically. Of course, the market of production system, including carbon sequestration, social recreation, aesthetic and cultural values, planning in terms of instrumental as synergistic and competitive aspects, and of course, scientific and policy issues are important. Certain issues, challenges which we need to look at, the heterogeneity of the soil and contamination are two serious issues in characterization and management. This strong heterogeneity and contaminants, especially the heavy metals. The gross rate of carbon sequestration, several studies done here in Ohio State by some of my students and colleagues in the USDA, ARS, Ron Pollard and his colleague, about 1 to 2 microgram of carbon per hectare per year. This is gross. We should consider the hidden carbon cost in terms of varying nursery, planting, pruning, watering, fertilizing, especially fertilizing, and maintaining sidewalks and roads, and reducing the other potent gases with high global warming potential, such as N2O and CH4. Also environmental impact of surface runoff, sediment transport, and of course non-transport pollution. We should consider all that in assessing the net carbon gain through some carbon sequestration and pressure carbon sequestration. We should consider the soil-less solution in urban agriculture because scarcity of arable land, objective climate change, water scarcity, urban and rural population increase, necessitates soil scientists and agronomists to look beyond the traditional farming from soil-based operation to highly efficient greenhouse or vertical farms involving aquaculture, aquaponics, hydroponics, aeroponics, aerofarms, and other soil-less cultures. This approach will be useful to water-scarce countries with a little amount of land, and this will minimize the problem of land grab and reduce the issue of the so-called soil refugees. There are several types of soil-less cultures, liquid, which include hydroponics and aquaponics, air and aeroponics, and there are many solid systems made from wood chips, crop residues, bagasse, and peat moss. And I think it's a challenge that the vegetable growing on tubes in a greenhouse is able to show very new agriculture technologies. So soil-less culture is something that soil scientists should really consider, especially in terms of urban agriculture. Research of priorities for greening of urban lands, decreasing hidden carbon costs in home lawns, enhancing rural efficiency of inputs, choosing adaptable species, mainly lawn-mowing, prioritizing biomes and regions, integrating land with trees and shrubs, reducing emissions of N2 and CH4, enhancing depth distribution of soil carbon rather than concentrating simply the surface few centimeters, and making carbon pooling land independent of climate. Recreation land use are acceptable priorities listed here for your consideration discussion. It will minimize the hidden carbon cost, reducing imports, decreasing soil compaction, improving aeration, integrating trees and shrubs, prolonging the duration of carbon sequestration, establishing floods and degraded lands, increasing use efficiency of inputs. In urban forests, choosing adaptable species, and developing management guidelines, enhancing low-ground carbon pool, both soil and roots, using integrated pest management techniques, so we can reduce pesticide use, evaluating co-benefits of trees, managing micronutrients, especially iron and manganese. You know, I have a couple of them which require iron injection once in a while, and it will be 5 years. Enhancing ecosystem carbon pool in urban lands is a very important strategy to mitigating carbon emissions. In urban agriculture, increasing agronomic productivity, of course, improving soil structure and care, enhancing effective rooting depth, creating balance in nutrients by integrated nutrient management, reducing impacts of heavy metals such as lead, creating a favorable water regime because the root depth is very shallow quite often, and developing appropriate seed bed at the same time, minimizing, of course, the soil disturbance. In terms of the final conclusion, this picture of urban agriculture comes from Havana in Cuba. Food production in urban ecosystem is a very high priority, and I think what we want to do is create a goal, establish a goal, and try to achieve it, that 10-20% of food consumed in urban centers is produced locally. I think that's very important to, for many, many reasons, social, economic, policy, environmental issue. And this strategy would recycle nutrients and sequester carbon and improve the environment. I really appreciate your participation, though by remote system, and I wish you all the best in your deliberation of this symposium. Thank you once again for giving me the opportunity to talk about it.
We should still clap,
even
though
yeah.
Thank you.
So for our discussion, we have, we have time for discussion. Of course, Dr. Laughlin is here to answer questions. So what I propose is that you still ask a question, and then we'll see if someone else here can answer it in more discussion. Does that sound like a good plan?
Sure.
All right. Okay. So yes.
I was a bit astonished that you suggested to go for this less soil-driven agriculture, etc. And as far as I understand, many things, so we should really go more soils in urban systems because of all the ecosystem services that they provide. So, have you ever heard about this less soil agriculture? And is that a hot topic in USA? I'm from Finland, which is in Europe, and so we are not really into that business yet.
It's gained steam. Yes.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of students in the university are really interested in that because it sounds so technological.
Right, and I think the neat part about it is we can go vertical because we're running out of space this way. So if we can produce food this way, go into the third dimension because of a lack of space in urban areas, I think it would pay off. I don't think I hope he's not suggesting that we should neglect trying to keep open spaces in urban cities for other purposes and other services.
And there are lots of embodied energy. Does anyone else have any thoughts on the soil of agriculture?
I think if you're trying to get agriculture in a small city, that might be, you're concerned about contamination. That's one way to get agriculture into the city if your soils are already in trouble. But I also see it as kind of like more high intensity management than the soils give us a little more.
Yeah, I think they're in high intensity systems often, but it's like vertical farming with a lot of LED lights and so forth.
So just a comment. On what he presented. I saw a talk several years ago on Victory Gardens. Anybody probably not old enough to remember Victory Gardens? My parents did. World War II, there was a big push to get your average American who has a lot of land to grow their own produce so that farmers can produce for the soldiers. And there have been some estimates of up to 30% of the local produce was being produced this way. For communities across, not just urban areas, but even smaller communities. So there's a lot of potential there. And if you look at the yield, I'm not an ag expert at all, but I've seen some yield curves where the population is going to outgrow what we're going to be able to produce, given a very optimistic yield curve into the future. So we're going to have to figure out a place to grow this stuff.
You need a lot of GMO actually to make vertical potatoes, for example, or vertical carrots. Or
yeah.
Maybe beans and bananas would do well, but how about all the
yeah. Yeah, it's not going to work for everything. Absolutely.
Really?
Certain things. I know there's some, like, some city in California that produces most of its garden. I have a question. For Dr. What did he mean by saying making sea pools and lawns independent of climate? I didn't understand at all. He said one of our research goals, or maybe not just research, but strategic goals, should be making carbon pools in lawns independent of climate. I didn't understand what he meant by that.
Maybe protected carbon.
Yeah, I'm presuming the different pools in the soil.
I wonder if you could mean we have a mixture of grass and soil, mixture in your lawn, so that if you get a drought, for example, that the whole lawn's not going to go dead.
Oh, so it's not as dependent on the inputs, on the irrigation and fertilizer, see that sort of thing. Any other points of discussion? I mean, it's kind of obvious we don't have our first speaker with us. It's a little awkward, but I think it's a good idea to kind of think about what's, what overview of the session, what everyone's interests are. I was interested in the soil depth issue, because that's something that I research in, kind of like a new frontier just going down, because in urban areas you have a lot of very shallow soils, because you have a lot of gradient and compaction underneath. So you don't get the depth that you might find in the past.
I agree. I think that's really important. And in New Jersey, we're trying to develop, as we know, it has been developed, a soil restoration standard for after construction and development. And the depth is one issue. Some of us were arguing for greater depth. There were others that said, "Oh, what's the difference between 4 and 6?"
Right. Yeah. I have. I should give you my card, but I have a soil specimen.
Another aspect of the depth is that in urban areas we bury a lot of carbon. And I don't think we have to invest in that.
That's true.
We bury an awful lot of carbon, and even wetlands too. I mean, New York City, I've been at where they've done construction projects, and they're going down, and there's this rich, deep, black layer of organic material that was from the previous wetland before they put 30 feet of fill on it, 100 years ago.
Right, so we're making our own little modern-day fossils.
Yes, sort of, kind of, but but that carbon is pretty well protected relative to, what is, and then we also bury it in our garbage.
Right.
So there's,
and think, coal.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot to the whole depth question.
So I don't want to ruin my talk, but that's one of the key things we're looking at with our talk, and we'll find that 75% of the carbon is way deeper than people. That's all I'm saying.
I think I think a lot of what we're going to be discussing today, I mean, there is all this question of sort of the carbon emissions versus what we're sequestering and storing. So we're focusing on carbon storage in the symposium, but also the dynamics, and not only what's going on in the soil, but the questions of all of our management and the implications of that for the net carbon effect of our soil management. So.